Supervisors reconvene, and we're going to move down and take the Great Northern topic, item 8A. Good morning.
Good morning.
We've got 7 minutes left of it.
Well, you did such a great job listening.
Hi.
My name's Di Strachan, and I'm the facilitator and organizational development staff and consultant for Great Northern Services. Thanks for having us here today. And I want to take a moment to introduce our executive director that I think most of you already know of Great Northern Services, and that's Marie Jose.
Hi everybody. I've been with Great Northern for about 7 years, and I've been the executive director for exactly 3 years this time. So I just wanted to give you a little outlook on what Great Northern does before you probably know most of the services, but what we also do is we actually help leaders try to accomplish some of the projects that are really needed in our county. And we help with the planning and finding funding and what else?
Training,
anything. So this is a new line of work that we are actually getting into. It started right after the Bowles fires, where we decided to do a resiliency planning, which was kind of a little after the fact, but still a good training for us. Then we went on to working with the SOAR project, which was through the Siskiyou County Education. And then we produced and worked on the Montague Resiliency Project. And this one is really important, and I think in the future, it is going to be very important for all of us. So all we want to do today is kind of introduce the project we did and give you a small outline. And as you can see, I'm very nervous, so I'm going to let Di speak.
I could not tell you were nervous, just so you know, until I said that. So we also wanted to make a point to come today to shine a bright light on Supervisor Chris and his involvement in the project. It was pretty amazing, and that's really what motivated me personally to come today. And so we're kind of here for good news. We're not asking for funding, we're not asking anything of you except to maybe learn a little bit more about resilience planning so that you could take that back, and maybe some of your communities would be interested in doing that, and we would help find funding for that also. So. Yeah, actually, I hope I don't embarrass you, but I'm going to go for it here.
All right.
So let's just start with, have you been involved in resilience planning? Raise your hand, supervisors.
Yes.
You remember in the weed? And a couple of you, so familiar with it a little bit. So we're defining resilience as a community's ability to robustly recover and respond well and get their community back to a flourishing, thriving state, whatever that was, as soon as possible. That's it, as simply. So resilience planning is identifying and looking for ways to strengthen the community's foundation and make it even more sustainable than it already is. And a lot of that involves communication and the community being able to work together, not just the leaders, but the whole town. So we have a name for this planning process, and that is, well, for Montague and for Weed, it was the Montague Community-Inspired Resilience Planning. So we put a lot of effort over 2 years of getting as much as the community involved as possible. So it was super, super successful. One of the things we handed out to you was just a few comments from some of the folks that showed up at the meetings. Some of them were in shock that they were being heard so well, and that the community leaders they had no idea that the community leaders were so interested in what they had to say and cared about them. That's not, and so part of the planning itself was building resiliency. So over the 2 years, people getting to know each other, building confidence in each other as a community, they had opportunities to disagree in meetings, but still saw they had shared values, and that really strengthened the community. And some of these comments really reflect that, you know, that they said, I value taking the time to envision our future together and what it looks like. Just being together and working together was valuable to me. Maybe some of the residents didn't even come away knowing what they were planning for, but they created a strong connection with each other, and they're much more ready to volunteer and do what needs doing. So, in fact, I wanted to ask the chair, could I ask at this time just to ask a question of Supervisor Chris, or?
Good.
Okay. So,
I don't
you
have
know,
any say?
No. Just like, so. Supervisor Chris was actually volunteered to be on the planning team, which met for 36 hours over the course of the time. And I just want to ask your opinion about what your opinion was taking away from the experience. What did you notice?
I think part of it was the irony. We were talking about resilience during COVID, and we were talking about resilience with the water issue again in Montague that they had to deal with the water transfer from the Shasta River to the city of Montague. I think that what I gained a lot, what I appreciated about your service, was that you didn't come in. This can serve as a blueprint.
As facilitators.
As facilitators, yeah. And it can serve as a blueprint for other communities, but it's not a cookie cutter. You didn't come in with an agenda saying, if you do this, you can have this and this and this will be improved. You came in, what do you want as a community? And then the community came together genuinely in what it wanted to do. Politics aside, political ideology aside, it was basically on common solutions. So I got all those things from it, plus the action plans we'll be doing, such as co-enforcement, those sorts of factors, hopefully to be able to use very well in the Montague area.
Nice. Thank you. The other thing I want to do is, I do a lot of leadership building in Siskiyou County and beyond, and one of the things that we really appreciated about Supervisor Chris is that he, as a leader, really modeled how to show up as a solid participant of a group and share resources and insights, and also was a leader at the same time. He was able to flip back and forth, and it was beautifully done. Didn't try to dominate. But added a lot, was really, the whole community really thanks you.
Well, thank you. And what I liked about it too was this could be used for future grants.
Well, that's really why, yeah, that's what you have sitting in front of you. This is for hopefully to attract funding to work on the top 8 priorities that the community came up with. And it's pretty interesting because resilience planning isn't just about recovery, it's about creating a foundation. And the very top one, unanimous, was just to make the downtown more welcoming, clean it up, provide a place for where new business could be nurtured and would want to move into. It was really interesting how that evolved. Some people say, how is this resilience planning? But it's really foundational planning. And you just really need to start somewhere with that. Were you going to add something?
No.
Oh, I thought I heard you saying something. And I will appreciate the 2-minute warning for whoever dings the bell out here.
You don't have one.
Yeah? Oh, for the next 40 minutes, I'd like to share.
I do have a gavel.
So in our approach, and what we think is so important for, well, especially for rural planning, but for all planning, is that we really made a point to build resilience in the moment, and we slowed everything down. Like, if we needed more meetings, we had more meetings. People were able to ask each other questions. They learned that great communication is about understanding each other, not about agreeing with each other. So we also laid down some tools and new ground rules that the town could function with, that all people's comments are valid and none are invalid. And we had so many meetings that they took it to, you know, we started to see it show up when we weren't the ones leading it. So basically the planning process was, if it was over 2 years, COVID really was, like you said, it was crazy to be doing it, but so proactive. That was what was great. But there was a leadership team. There were two surveys. One survey was to identify the needs and what were your needs. And the second community survey, after we were not able to do community meetings safely, was, okay, what are your priorities? Here's 8 top priorities. Now we want the public to prioritize those. So the public really had a hand in it the whole time. And that was really important. And then there was a timeline. Over the next 3 years, there's going to be a phases of implementing these game plans. And the game plans are more than just a strategy. The game plans are, we identified ahead of time, well, what kind of funding? We brought in 2 development directors from the 2 largest foundations to talk to the community. And they said, these are the kind of things we want to fund. In fact, it was really great because one of the funders said, oh, we can help you with this, we can help you with that. And the leadership team was like, oh, is it going to be that easy? So having a really well put together plan really is going to attract funding, and it's really spelled out exactly what they want to be doing. And you can flesh it out a lot more. So that's basically the planning process. Community meetings, community surveys, having a leadership team, which was not just the mayor and, you know, just the staff. It was anybody who wanted to sit in that long and support the effort. Okay, so Marie, did you want to talk any more about having a plan and the link between government? You can say no.
No, not at this moment. I have no idea.
It's okay, I'm used to reading your face. Yeah, that was a long pause. Okay, I think another great outcome of a service for the mayor and the leaders of a community is when you do something this proactive, where we're not responding, well, even though we were in COVID, we're not responding to a problem and trying to figure out what to do about it. Like, we're not problem solvers, we're visionaries. We're thinking way ahead. We had the town put together their own vision. Like, what is your, and you'll see it in here, what does it look like when everything's functioning the way you want it to look? What is the purpose of your leadership? So one of the things that happened that we didn't intend on is people in the town walked away with such a great positive feeling about their leaders, which so different than typical, you know.
And I want to add something to that. And also, I have noticed, and it's everywhere, it's not just Siskiyou County, we don't really have people that actually want to serve in government anymore. So, as you may know, by actually bringing people into this kind of meeting and this kind of brainstorming, it's actually teaching people what government does. And it's also kind of a resilience for government, because you're actually starting showing what it is, and it actually anybody probably can do with just a little training and a little knowledge. So it's making those positions a little more affordable, I want to say, to people. So I think, to me, that was one of the most important things. Finally, people realized that, oh, yeah, maybe I could serve as well. So I'm looking at it as a
community building,
but also
volunteer for the government.
Volunteer, resilient. Well, it's resilient.
Yeah.
Sorry, resilient.
And so I think that's something Supervisor Chris did such a great job with. Because he said, the county can help you with this. The county can do this. Why don't I do this research and I'll get back to you? So there was such a clear window on how the government works together. And even though it was, you know, the mayor, she's been in Mayor Tiffany. What's her last name again? She kind of knew, but not really. So there's so many good reasons for our communities to do resilience planning rather than wait for something to happen and then try to deal with it. And that's one of the reasons we came to speak to you today, besides to embarrass Supervisor Chris, was to just really let you know this is available for all our communities in the county. We could even be creative and do something countywide eventually if you would like to. But we really want you to know we're available for that, to support you in your leadership. And are there any questions? You're obviously, I didn't go into detail of all the 8 priorities and all that.
I have a few.
Yeah.
I struggle a lot with this because in my district, I have 14 communities. Only 2 of them are incorporated. And year by year, I keep losing one of them to fire. But there's no structure there to work with like you have with an incorporated town. And so what are your suggestions for those small communities? Because they really struggle. Hornbrook with the Klamath on fire, I'm sure you're very well aware of the struggles we have with the water system out there. You know, in 2017, it's still not rebuilt. And there just isn't that cohesive leadership. So I worry that some of these towns are going to become ghost towns in my district. And folks look to me to be the leader of this. And with 14 of these communities, I can't focus full time on one of them, if you will. So I'm looking for suggestions on how to address this.
Okay, well, what I would like to do is let me go back to the office, study the project a little bit, and then I can give you a proposal. Okay. I mean, it's just, you know, just...
I appreciate that.
We can talk and we can put a little plan together, and then we'll see where it leads.
Yeah, because I will tell you that the personal workload of myself and Mr. Dean sitting back there with the Klamath on fire and then the Slater fire, it's just horrendous. And we just don't have a structure in our town. And what I say is the town really doesn't have resilience because it can't rebound without some kind of leadership.
Yeah, and we started working with Hornbrook a couple years ago, right after the fire. And then it seems like things went in different ways, but I'm totally, I would love to revisit and brainstorm a little more on, especially your district is.
Yeah, I mean, some of my towns are 3 hours from here.
Yeah.
You know, driving time. Mm-hmm.
So is it okay if I contact you directly?
Please.
Okay,
please.
Cool. I know where to find you.
I'm just going to add, what leaders do is focus attention. And what a lot of our small communities need is what to focus on. Like, it all seems so much. So one of the things that we can do, since you're so busy, if we're helping, we take on all the logistics and the structure and the facilitation and we write it down. We pretty much make your leadership a lot easier. And the plan then is basically an agreement with the community on what should we focus attention to first, second, and third. So having, going through a planning process, not to have a plan to sit on the shelf, but helps everybody focus their attention no matter how uncommunicative they are. So we kind of have I'm pretty excited about Great Northern and how they can focus their attention to support leaders, both at a county level, well, any level, city level, whatever. So I just want, that's my...
Well, I focus my attention with the few community leaders that I have that are pretty well connected with fireside councils. And that's often the only structure around some of the smaller communities.
Yeah, so you can see when you look at the priorities in here, they want to, they wanted to have their leaders in town have more training in how to be effective leaders, how to do planning, so they, and how to promote the town, or put, how to put on an event that's going to draw. So economic development was definitely part of this too.
Okay. Yeah. Mr. Terry, you made my day here. I got embarrassed a little bit, so it's funny.
Oh, good.
You got me a little red. But no, I mean, they were just going to give us the hard copy and just share it with us. And mm-hmm. I thought, and I think there might be other supervisors that might benefit. I know Mead had benefited from it, mm-hmm. but I thought other supervisors might. So this is, I hope this does benefit all the districts.
Yeah, we suffer from flood quite a bit on the, yeah. on the west side of the, mm-hmm. the county as well.
Yeah.
Both north, south, east, west.
Sure. Yeah. You know, for me, I'll tell you that I can see, with it, and again, they've got to want to do it, but the city of Dunsmuir, you mentioned flood. I mean, they're in a flood zone, and they're in a fire zone. I mean, they've got all these things going on, and I'm going to share that with them. I think this is wonderful. I think,
yeah.
if anything, it brings the community together.
Really does.
So that's what I'm looking for.
It absolutely does that. And funding can come from where?
We can figure out where to find the funding. I mean, this was done through CDBG. There's tons of CDBG funding for resilience planning at this point. It's the highlight of everybody's life at the moment, resilience.
And, yeah, right, at higher levels.
Yes.
Right, so it's because it's proactive. Mm-hmm. And so it's cheaper in the long run to be ready, and also morally, not morally, but ready, like have the town, like the town's ready. The Montague's like, okay, we know what to do. One of the exercises we put them through is, what are all your current strengths? And they saw on paper the 40, well, it was two meetings, 40 people and then 30 people, and they saw, my gosh, look at us. We're really already good at so many things. But it took the collective feeling and the feeling of the, having the town go, we can do this. Whereas without this kind of planning or leadership, they don't have that feeling. Everyone feels like they're in their own camps. And we had one, you'll appreciate this, one in the first meeting, somebody came up, he was so upset about so many things, and this, he was going to come to this public meeting and just let everybody have it. And so we facilitated, which like, he was like, saying what was important to him, and I just said the ground rule, everything is valid, nothing's invalid. And then I leaned into him, I said, do you have anything else to say that's important to you? And the whole, you know, the town that showed up was like, oh my gosh, we can't believe this. So they're like, oh, it's okay to listen to each other. So just that, huge and huge. And we don't usually focus on that. We usually focus on the bricks and the mortars, and it's easier, but we, yeah, that'd be great. Okay, well, I want to finish with the words of the mayor. If there's no more questions.
I just want to jump in and
go ahead
and say that
I'm trying to do it right.
I dealt with some of the most functionally dysfunctional groups in the last 7 months or 8 months that I've been here. And I value so much your energy and focus on trying to bring out the value in everyone's voices.
Yeah.
And that pulls people together.
It really does.
And gets results. And you're amazing at what you do, and that's what makes a community. And that's what gets the best results. And you do your work really well.
Thank you so much. Yeah, just holding the space, like you all did so well today, for people to be heard. You know, I really came away from, I haven't been to a board of supervisors meeting in 20 years. And I was like, wow, you guys are working. You know, really open mind, open hearted, listening, then still retaining your duty to your region. It was really impressive, so I appreciated that. So this is what the mayor said at the end. And people were a bit, they didn't know what to expect, right? A little skeptical to begin, but that's okay, we could deal with that. So at the end, she said, working, this is Tiffany Lorenzini, the current mayor of Montague, working, learning, and supporting each other is what community is all about. I am so happy to be part of such an incredible town and looking forward to creating even more opportunities and resilience for ourselves in the future. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
We're, you know, available anytime.
Get back to me.
So, I guess we did sell something.
Thank you.
I can't call you from my district anymore.
Well, you can.
No, I'm glad that everybody can see benefit those in your West County as well.
In particular, smaller towns, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not so sure Mount Shasta or Weed or Wairika, they can and should at some point. But I like the idea of starting with our smaller towns that really are struggling to survive as we know there.
Okay. Moving down to Mr. Cooley. Probation. 9A.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mike Holding, Siskiyou County Chief Probation Officer. So I'm coming to you today to talk about an attestation that has was asked of the county controller, the state controller's office, in regards to the realignment of the Division of Juvenile Justice. And the second part is the plan that that attestation goes to. So I can do the 50,000 foot level, we can start there, and then if you'd like to ask some questions, I'll be happy to dive deeper in any section. So I'll just review the attestation. The first part of the attestation is asking the county that we created a realignment subcommittee in accordance with Welfare and Institutions Code section 1995, and providing an attestation it did so in compliance with that law. And I'll go to the second attestation. The county realignment subcommittee is composed of the representatives from each of the specified local government agencies and at least three community members as required by WIC section 1995. So the Juvenile Justice Coordinating Council was established in this county prior to, well, in the 2000s, but it was recognized earlier than that. But the Crime Prevention Act of 2000 actually brought it to the forefront. The Crime Prevention Act is the committee that the Division of our DJJ subcommittee is ran under. So on July 26th, a meeting was held of the Juvenile Justice Coordinating Council. While there, we recognized the DJJ subcommittee and established bylaws regulating that particular committee. So we did had the members of the Juvenile Justice Coordinating Council present. At this particular time of the attestation, the three community members were not required. So at the close of that meeting, we then opened up the DJJ subcommittee, again July 26th, and reviewed the plan that was put before the group, and also recognized three community members as required by Welfare and Institutions Code, section 1995, subsection B. So as far as the attestation is asking, the county, Siskiyou County, has done that, both at the Juvenile Justice Coordinating Council level and by establishing our DJJ subcommittee. So that part of the process is done. So if I can back up a little bit, September of 2020, Gavin Newsom approved the legislation realigning the youth. Formerly, youth would be sentenced to serious and violent crimes, would be sentenced to state of Division of Juvenile Justice. This Senate Bill 823 realigned those youth to now be housed or be the responsibility to be housed by the county level. So there will be no state housing. As of July 1 of 2021, they stopped intake at the Division of Juvenile Justice, and counties are now responsible for housing these youth. These youth take a particular location, they take particular programming, a lot of security, but the focus is on rehabilitation. In the beginning, a lot of the 58 counties represented by the Chief Probation Officers of California thought it'd be a great idea. Last week, the number I heard was that there were six counties that were actually willing to allow youth to be held in their facility. So that shrunk quite a bit. So coming up with the plan was difficult, to say the least. But I reached out to one of our counterparts, Tama County, which we currently house youth within, and engaged in discussion. Prior to that, there was no indication that Tama County would house DJJ youth. After that discussion, Chief Minch agreed that he would move forward with building or developing a DJJ-like setting for county youth. So that has become our plan. That was our only option at this time. As we move forward into the future, I'm sure other options will be developed or implemented. For example, youth may need a higher level of commitment for, like, let's say, sex offender. Tama County will not house sex offender. They wouldn't be equipped with that particular training, as well as the behavioral health youth as well. That would take a specialized treatment facility. So there's still more work ahead of us in the future, but for right now, we have a good foundation. We have a location that's willing to accept youth. I'm happy to report we do not have any youth that meet that criteria as of today. Since 2000, or the past 10 years, we've only committed 4 youth to the Division of Juvenile Justice, ranging in ages from 17 to 21. So, I mean, if you look historically, I think the landscape is changing with youth. Our violations are down, our intake is down. Again, all attributed to the different changes in legislation that's out there. So there's other parameters that are surrounding. So our intake has gone less, yes, but there's a lot of reasons why that has happened, and I expect it to continue down that same path, or at least I'd be hopeful to think that we're doing a fantastic job here, and our youth will not commit any, you know, violent crimes. However, you know, we do have a plan. And so the youth advocacy groups came into play, and they've been a big voice in this, and they've been really have developed a big standing in this arena. And the youth advocacy, kind of, my opinion, my belief, is the reason the attestation came before us. It's not, that's not a normal process for the state controller to ask for. The advocacy group did file a temporary restraining order to halt the allocation. Unfortunately, that was declined, and the funds have now been allocated as of August 1st. So I'm just coming before you today to talk about, again, the attestation is something that the controller is asking for. I'm advising the board here that DJJ subcommittee has met as the required laws. We've met every condition, at least especially in this attestation that I bring before you today. There's still a lot of planning ahead of us with the committee and with this particular realigned youth, and I know we'll get there. I can pause for a second if anyone has any questions.
Just glad our numbers are low.
Yeah, as well am I, yes. You know, the plan is draft for Tama because there's a lot of requirements. The Office of Youth and Community Restoration is now a newly enacted branch of the Department of Health and Human Services on the state level. They'll be the overseer of this particular tract of youth, and but they're not in the punitive side. They're supposed to be helpful, beneficial, just making sure that the regulations are established in this, we're heading in the right direction. The Warden of State and Community Corrections will still be involved with that, but they'll be phased out by 2025, I believe.
Mr. Coley,
yes,
it just crossed my mind, if we get that grant money and we're lucky enough not to have anybody admitted through DJJ, what happens to that money if we don't lose it?
So there's no requirement, and I would like to point out, I'd like to thank the auditor's office, who were very helpful in helping me prepare this plan. It was through them some guidance. But right now, I believe the allocation is being held under the Board of Supervisors, but it will be under Ms. Davis's office, where the budget will be established. So the money doesn't, it's not going to go away. That's ours to hang on to utilize for this population. But there's no requirement to spend it. It's held over, so it's...
Yeah. So it'll accumulate.
It will accumulate. However, I mean, but the however there's the the contracts that we're going to establish, there's a consortium that's going to be developed, and it's what they're going to be. It's a going to be a group under the Chief Probation Officers of California. What they're going to do is basically the clearinghouse. They'll monitor the availability of beds and assist counties with relocating you into a program. So if we have a sex offender treatment program, we need them that. But there's a fee to that. And of course, the contracts will establish will also be fees as well. I just don't know what those fees are today.
Yeah. As long as we don't lose it.
We're not going to lose the money, yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. I believe there's growth attributed to that as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome. Great question.
Is there a potential, I guess, for it to hit the general fund at a point if there's no money?
Yes. if we had a really bad year, there absolutely could be.
But we would have it without this program anyway? Is that true?
That is correct. We're currently paying as we are.
That's what I need.
Mm-hmm. So today, it's again the plan. I hope, I can update you as we go along with the AIMA as they build out their plan to further include a type of treatment. But I think today, one action I would like, if we could, is to designate a person who would sign this. The attestation is due on the 16th, which gave me very, really fine, tight guidelines to hit to make sure that we got this done in time. So I don't know. Ms. Davis's office or myself. So
it says either or in the recommended motion.
So does that mean it stays, or do we need to name who it is? It can be either one of you.
I would, Angela Davis, County Administrator, I would prefer an actual selection or to confirm the either the chief or the county administrative office or her designee. So either someone specifically by name or the either.
Okay. So. I'm going to try it here.
Okay.
And see where we go. So I'll make the recommended motion, but I think we're naming the county administrator. Is that correct? Or
are you okay with that? Okay. Sure.
Okay. That's all you need?
May we please add or her designee?
Okay.
County administrator, yeah. Officer, and or her designee.
Okay.
Just in case I don't want to hold up this process at
okay.
any time.
Yeah.
Is that what we're calling it?
Okay.
There's not many people here in the room right now, but what your department's doing has such a wide impact under the current things and 10, 15, 20 years down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So I recognize there's, it's not any fanfare and all that stuff, but I appreciate what your department's done.
I appreciate my department as well. Thank you, Supervisor Chris, for the comments. Certainly a great team there that are making great advancements in treatment rehabilitation.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right.
Are we good?
Call for a vote.
Okay. Supervisor Chris.
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsa.
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yes.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
And Supervisor Haupt.
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to recess the Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors convened as a Flood Control and Water Conservation District. First up is public comment. We received public comment for any topic under the flood control this time. I don't know if I have any blue cards.
Can I just do it after?
Yeah, I can wait.
Okay.
Yeah, if
it's okay.
You want,
I don't know. Whatever you want me to talk.
I have to ask if there's any comment online.
None online.
All right, seeing none. Mr. Parker.
Matt Parker, Siskiyou County Natural Resources. Good afternoon, board members. Today is a big monumental step in the SGMA process. We have a couple of actions, one direction, one action to take towards the end. But I wanted to start first introducing or acknowledging members of the team that are on the phone. We have Dr. Laura Foglia, our project lead, as well as Dr. Thomas Harder. We also have Katie Duncan from Stantec, who is our facilitator. And I believe Pat Alliance, our DWR contact, is on as well. So I want to just recognize that they're on the call. As part of our big team in this big process that's coming to an end, about 3 years of lots of work, lots of meetings, lots of committee meetings, lots of stakeholder outreach to get a near complete plan for our three basins of View Valley, Scott Valley, and Shasta Valley. The plans are not perfect. I'll admit that. A lot of folks that participated will admit that as well. We were dealt with a few obstacles, one short on time. As we were developing plans, we were learning a lot about the basins in terms of just groundwater in general. A lot less than other basins around the state have in terms of resources and knowledge. And so we had to move quickly to develop these plans to meet our required January 31 of 2022 deadline. On top of that, we had the hurdles that a lot of other folks are facing, 2 years of drought, COVID, fires, really stretched resources thin, as well as other regulatory burdens being forced upon a few folks that have really slowed this process. But I think it's quite an accomplishment to get to this point with the plans that have been put in front of you today. And so one of the key steps happened a few weeks ago, and that our advisory committees that you all appointed to use as a boots on the ground group to really help create these plans, because what's in these plans is gonna affect those folks. And so we needed stakeholders that knew about their basins, knew about what would happen with actions and projects and metrics and all of that, and how to develop these plans that work. And so our committees met a few weeks back, and we're all able to give us a consensus in terms of moving the plans forward at the stage they were at. Not everybody was agreed upon in terms of the final product, but I think the group felt it was time to move the product forward, the plans forward, and put out for public review, put in front of you all to move this process going. So what I wanted to do is I asked our committee chairs to provide a little bit of their input, because I think it would be good for you all to hear from the stakeholders themselves. And so we have two chairs in the room, but I'll start with our chair for View Valley, and that's Richard Nelson. And so he's going to provide a few minutes on what sort of his thought was and his feelings. So
need to find him,
yeah. Should give you a heads up, sorry. Or Richard Nelson, right?
Richard, you can unmute.
Battery 80%.
Richard, are you there?
I'm Richard Nelson.
Good afternoon.
Pardon me?
Good afternoon. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you. We are at our cattle operation in Eastern Oregon, but I'm glad to join you via Zoom here. We've been farming in the Butte Valley for approximately 30 years. We're a three-generation farming family. The company is Plant Sciences Incorporated. My wife and I started in 1985. Our two sons and four grandsons are involved in the business, and we employ several hundreds of people in our operations in the Central Coast area of California, in the San Joaquin Valley area, and in Butte Valley. The opportunity to be the chairman of the Butte Valley Groundwater Advisory Committee has been an interesting and challenge and an opportunity to learn a great deal about our valley and the groundwater issues that we're facing. Possible undesirable results with shrinking groundwater is that we will have fewer crops and abandoned ranches and agriculture. We'll have less habitat, therefore less wildlife. We'll have well outages. We'll have loss of jobs. We'll have people leaving Butte Valley, and we'll have public water supplies adversely affected. What is it that could result in that? It would, things, for example, increase or decline in groundwater pumping is a significant factor. What our climate is going to be doing in the next few years is a huge factor. Pumping that takes place in the lower Klamath, Tule Lake area is an impact on our groundwater in Deep Valley. And the other scenario is, what if the model is not correct? We believe the model is quite close to accuracy. We are grateful for the team that has provided the committee with information over the last several 2 to 3 years to draft the management plan that you folks are looking at now. That technical team, as well as consultants from UC Davis, have provided excellent information to the committee over the last several 2 or 3 years, from which now has been developed this document which you are reviewing. Groundwater has declined approximately 30 to 40 feet in the last 50 to 60 years in Butte Valley. If it declines another 15 feet, we will lose approximately 5% of domestic and agricultural wells. If it declines another 30 feet, we will lose upwards of 25%, or a quarter of all domestic and agricultural wells in the valley. So it's an important thing that we are addressing here, and the plan does address these potential declines in water levels. The good news is we do not have an overdraft in the Butte Valley. Groundwater is much like a checking account. It's all about deposits and withdrawals. If you take more out than you put in, you're in trouble. And we actually have, based on our modeling information, a recharge of 280,000 acre feet a year on average. We're pumping 70 to 80,000 acre feet a year, which leaves an excess of 200,000 acre feet a year, most of which exits to the north and the northeast towards the Tule Lake Basin and the lower Klamath Basin. So it's a slow-moving underground river, underground, moving to the north and northeast, out of which we're pumping. The one thing that's important to understand about agriculture in Deep Valley is that all of the crops that are grown there have huge economic impacts on industries that reach far beyond the Butte Valley. For example, alfalfa grown supplies dairies across the entire state and oftentimes outside of the state. Garlic that is produced, the 400 acres of garlic produces seed cloves for 6 to 10,000 acres of garlic grown in California. strawberry plants that are grown in nurseries there literally provide 80% of all of the plants needed by fruit growers in California. And so the economic impact of agriculture in the Butte Valley reaches far, far beyond just the valley itself into the agricultural community throughout California and even the Western United States. And the document that's being provided to you, I think, is a good document. I think the technical team's done a good job. As Matt said, there's been a lot of discussion over the last many months on what is real and what is perceived and what can be trusted and what can't. Much of it is, I think, of that document is most, nearly all of that document reflects a consensus by the advisory committee, which includes four private pumpers, one residential person, one Butte Valley wildlife person, one Butte Valley Irrigation District person, one City of Forest person, one environmental person, and one from the Shasta Indian Nation. So it's a well-represented group. And we have had our strong discussions amongst ourselves and with the technical team, but I think the final product that is represented here is a great starting point for us from which to move forward. But some of it has to be accepted by faith as well. Faith is a substance of things hoped for. What are we hoping for? Rain and snow. Those are the deposits we're looking for that are going to go into our groundwater checking account. Faith is also the evidence of things unseen. You sure can't see this groundwater. But we do have a matrix of monitoring wells which will provide evidence going forward on the status of our groundwater levels and the conditions that will trigger certain mitigation measures if levels decline. In order to be able to do the work that is required going forward, it's estimated that we're going to need $120,000 to $220,000 a year to monitoring wells, evaluate data, and prepare annual reports for the state going forward. And so that is an area that we're all concerned about, is if we're going to do a good job, where is this money going to come from to accomplish the kind of data information that we need to acquire? So I think that covers pretty well a background. I think that the document that we have in hand that's ready to go, I hope, to public comment is a good document, a great starting point. And it's been a pleasure to work with the advisory committee and the county and technical team, the folks that have provided information for us. And we have a big potential to make right and or wrong decisions. And we need your support monetarily to be able to do that going forward. I think that's it for my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Well said. Next, I'll have John Tanassi, our chair for the Shasta Valley committee, give his summary.
Hi. I'm John Tanassi. I've been farming. I'm a new kid in town. I've only been here about 40 years farming in Siskiyou County. Boy, why do I have to follow him? That was wonderful. Thank you. I want to start by thanking you folks for stepping up and determining that you would be the groundwater sustainability agency. Because without willing partners, we wouldn't be here today. We have witnessed, our committee has witnessed over the last 2 years, step-by-step process. You're looking at a finished plan. We started with blank paper, and because of our willing partners, scientists, hydrogeologists, agency people, landowners in the basin, citizens at large, facilitated by senior mediators, and all pulled back together under one umbrella by county staff. So thank you to all of them. We couldn't do it without them. Our first meeting almost 2 years ago was not about groundwater. We spent at least the first three meetings, possibly even more, meeting as a group, determining how we were going to govern ourselves as a committee. What happened was we adopted a charter that required us to be inclusive, respectful, good listeners, and we had the attempt was to try to understand other people's viewpoint within the basin. Our meetings delved into discussions on many issues that came up. If we needed more time to digest the vast amount of data that we had, or to finesse a nuance, a point of concern, extra time was taken. The committee was able to back up a little bit. We would either have an ad hoc committee look into something a little longer, or put it back on next month's agenda so that we could hammer these things out and get to an agreement. This process that let us meet respectfully, I think, is what's going to move this plan forward and deal with all these issues that Mr. Nelson brought up. If there are issues going forward, but I think we have a process to deal with them, and we have the best plan as of today. I'm looking forward to our plan review in 5 years, which I'm sure will be a better plan, but I'm happy with the plan we have so far. And I would like to announce to you that our committee in the Shasta Valley unanimously agreed to move this plan forward, and we're asking you to submit a notification of intent to adopt the groundwater sustainability plan. Thank you. It's been a pleasure serving.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Well said again. And now we'll have Tom Enney from the Scott Valley Committee.
Hi, Tom Enney, Chair of the Advisory Committee for Scott Valley. Been in farming, our family has, since 1972, I think. So I have a pretty good background in farming. I agree, we started off with a charter that seemed like it would never end. It was 4 months or more, but I think that's how you started, and so that was okay. I'm really thankful that the county found Matt Parker to come on board and lead this whole thing. I don't know if he is overwhelmed by it, but he's gotten a lot of calls from a lot of people. I call him constantly. Called Ray, called just about everybody. As it started, I would write the same thing on my notebook, sell property. Because it was pretty scary when it started. I wrote it almost every meeting. Probably midway through, you know, I kind of stopped writing, sell property, find someone to buy it. Because it seemed like, you know, as the plan worked out, we could probably live with it and survive. I think we had a pretty diverse committee, tribal members, environmentalists, but everybody got along and worked pretty good. And then COVID hit, and then we were all on Zoom. The productivity of what we were able to do dropped by 50%, I'd say, and I'm sure it was the same for you guys. You didn't get to talk to someone after the meeting. You didn't get to see their facial expressions or their eye rolls or whatever it was. So I felt like we should have had more time to do it. You know, there were times there were 570 pages to review. We'd get emailed to us 3 days before the meeting. But a lot of it we'd seen before, but there'd be changes in it, so you'd have to read it all again. It would take hours to read it all. And, you know, and then finally kind of hit the end of it where we had a product that I think everybody agrees is about the best we could do. I hope the state agrees that it's the best we could do. It'll get reviewed publicly and the state has to approve it, providing that, you know, the committee here approves it. I hope it gets through that. I didn't have white hair when this thing started. It was brown. I think it was brown. Anyways, as we hit the end of it, I felt like I gave my time. I read everything. I was really interested in the process. I felt like I had to do this for the people that don't show up to meetings and don't volunteer. But then, as of a few weeks ago, the state came out and said, we don't care that you have a SIGMA plan. We're going to do emergency actions. And so that was pretty disheartening, that I felt like I've wasted 3 years on this. The state has emergency powers to do whatever they want, and I just, you know, you get these emails with their regulations and things, and certain people get them, other people don't get them. Well, I got them and read them, and I don't know if we can live with their emergency regulations. I personally can't, so I don't know how many board members will be around after the state has laid their path ablaze through all this. I'll probably stick around for a while. I think I might be a lifer on some of this stuff, but what the state is doing is not going to give us a chance to work with everything that we've given, what, close to 3 years on. And with emergency powers, they can do whatever they want. And so this plan might go forward and probably sit on a shelf while the state decides whether we can continue to farm or not. But I'm appreciative of everybody that stepped up and worked with the committee. But I don't know. I have heard some rumors some of the committee members are, they're just going to resign. The state isn't really going to let us do what they've tasked us to do as a local group solving local problems. So if anybody has any questions about that, I'm happy to answer them. But
I think you and I have discussed at length.
Yeah, it's pretty sad, really.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you, Tom. Well said again. You heard from some really good voices there on the committee. Really good storytelling, really good describing the process. So hopefully that provides you some comfort and the quality of the plans and the work to do moving forward. So, I guess if you don't mind, Chris, I have a couple of processy slides to pull up, walk you through some of the next steps as we move the process forward. So we can skip this slide. This basically lays out what's happened and what's going to be upcoming. So in front of you, you have a template for a letter. It's a notice of intent to adopt a groundwater plan. This is a requirement of SIGMA. And we have to provide at least 90 day ahead of time to the public that the board plans to adopt a hearing. Along with this letter, we also have to notify any city or county within the basin. Or of said basin, so obviously we're the county, but we'll still send a notice to our planning department as required. This basically gives them 30 days to respond if they would like to sit down and consult with the GSA regarding any elements of the plan. I wanted to note, it's not required by SIGMA, but we felt we would provide the same notice to the tribes that have been participating in the process as well. They've already stated early on that they wanted to consult with the GSA on elements of the plan, so we felt we would go above and beyond some of the requirements and offer the same consultation period to the tribes as well. So the goal or the public hearing, and I have to note an edit to your packet, is that we will plan to have our public hearing on December 7th, where you could adopt the plan. So that change is noted in the letter that you have in front of you that you can approve. Next slide, please. In terms of public comments, with direction from you as a board, we will officially open up a 45-day public comment period. which would start tomorrow and end on September 26th. The GSA is also going to host an informative webinar for folks to understand how the public comment process goes in terms of how we collect comments. They get put into templates or into spreadsheets. We classify them along with our facilitator and our technical team, and we have to organize them in order to provide any sort of response back to the public regarding these comments. So any comment that comes in at this stage, we can provide a response, whether it's just a simple admin punctuation comment or a more substantial comment. We will have a response on how that change may or may not get incorporated in the draft. And then in the first week or two in September, we're going to host public workshops where we'll provide a little more technical information to the public and allow some opportunity for some verbal public comment from the community. We'll likely look to push Butte Valley to the second week in September because of scheduling conflicts. Next slide, Chris. Thank you. And so some other next steps, as I said, we'll work with drafting responses to the public comments we received and update the drafts. In October, we'll hold advisory committee meetings where we'll show the committees and the public participating how those significant changes may or may not were incorporated in the plans. And then, as I said earlier, we'll look for December 7th to ask you to adopt the plans and then submit by January 31st of 2022. So that is all I have. Any questions?
I don't have a question, but I'd like to say something.
Sure. Absolutely.
First thing I'd like to say is, Tom, I haven't envied your job over the years. I've watched you turn into a pretzel, basically, with what you've had to deal with. It. I really appreciate your service to the folks in Scott Valley. With that said, the public has been wanting to engage. I will say that today what we're going to do is move this forward to you. And this is the period where Tom's pretty much finished with his work and I become actively involved with the response to public comments and looking for those particular things from my constituents that are issues in the plan. I want to hear from you and I encourage you to reach out any way you care to, and address the plan so that I may put your voice into it. I do need to go back to public comment, but I'm going to allow discussion from any of the board members at this point that have something to say.
I'd like to hear from the public, I think, at first.
Okay.
Well, if I could just take one comment.
Sure.
And I apologize if I get the name wrong. Tanasi?
Yeah.
I just want to thank you for acknowledging the board. We had an opportunity to let the state do this. We did it internally and taking the responsibility on such. So thank you for acknowledging that.
Thank you.
So I'm going to go to public comment and have one in-house, and it's Theo Johnson. And if you're online and you wish to make a public comment, please raise your hand. Press star 9.
Thank you. My name is Theo Johnson, and I'm a Scott Valley native, and my kids are the seventh generation there, and so this is really important to me for my family's future, and I can't say that I'm as enthusiastic about the direction on it, and it feels like it's been a bit of a runaway train, and I've heard it described that way by advisory committee members, so it's not just me. You might recall I was here commenting on the first draft that came out, and I have all these pages of comments that I made and I submitted to you all, but I might have been a little premature on that, but I had a lot of signatures. I just gathered them in a really fast fashion because that's the way this has been going, and I have about 40 signatures. Most of them are farmers and ranchers in the valley, and the tone is the problem. The frustrating part is that I could pretty much resubmit this. There hasn't been a lot of response to the comments that we submitted as the affected regulated community. But the good news is, this is written for a place called the Scott River Valley, and I don't know where that is, but it's not us. Scott River Valley is all throughout this document, and just kind of shows you, it wasn't written by anybody from here, apparently. I want to highlight a few of the things that bother me. There's some things I support. Tier 2 is the tier that they're going to start tackling right away, and I support the groundwater recharge projects that they want to try to implement. I support increasing irrigation efficiency. That's good. But I also think we need to draw attention to some of the anti-ag tone that's in here. It doesn't match you. I have so much respect for the Board of Supervisors here. You've always looked out for agriculture because that's who we are. That's who you represent. And let's look at, for example, the plan says that it has a lot in common with the Scott Valley plan, such as we both hold a common goal of protecting priority lands. Now, the Scott Valley plan says protecting priority agricultural lands, and this leaves that word out. And I made that comment last round, and nobody picked that up and put agricultural in. That needs to be in there. That's important. And the Scott Valley Plan is all about protecting agriculture. It's not about, if you don't say what kind of priority land you're talking about, it means nothing. It could be priority land to develop, for all I know. Okay,
go
see
ahead.
It. I'm running out. Okay.
Go ahead.
So, here's one. The groundwater pumping, they pointed the finger directly at groundwater pumping for threatening the yellow-legged frog and the western pond turtle. No, it's a lack of water that threatens them. We need to be looking at increasing our water supply by holding on to some of the water that leaves the valley. We don't need to be attacking groundwater pumping as it is now. I can understand if we need to limit not having a whole bunch more groundwater pumping where we would start having a problem, but protect who you have, your farmers and your ranchers, protect them now. Don't point the finger at them. I'll skip a few more points here, but it still relies heavily on conservation easements that are designed to repurpose land to non-ag use. And the Appendix 4A still says that non-irrigated ground will revert to native vegetation. We know that's not right. I talked about it last iteration of this draft, but it was ignored. It'll be an invasive species that'll replace those irrigated crops. Yet it still exists in the current draft. And then converting that ground, not only will it turn into a hotbed of invasive species, it takes feed away from people like me who have cattle. So it's a big problem for us to encourage, for a government program, to encourage these grounds to be set aside. That's going to just be devastating for us. Strategic pumping reductions is in there. It's a third tier. It's for on down the road, I recognize that, but it's still in there. And Sigma, my simple read of Sigma is that it doesn't require us to reduce groundwater pumping. It just requires us to deal with the groundwater issue. So we could be building our groundwater supply with some of these proactive projects, like reservoirs and stuff, that all got relegated to a small little paragraph, the very end of Chapter 4, that says we didn't have time to look at all these projects, but we, you know, maybe we will in the future. And here's another one. Just for, okay. Urban expansion seems to be encouraged. Chapter 21 of Chapter 4, page 21. This says cities can expand into agricultural land, and actually they could, through this market exchange program, they could gain credits for expanding into ag land because urban use is less water. Urban uses less water. So that's great news for the city because they can expand into ag and then gain credits to expand into wildlands so they can keep expanding into these areas. It's just so tone deaf. I don't think that the county intends for this to really stay in here, to encourage urban expansion because it uses less water. And then they can expand into wildlands because they have market credits to do so. That's just, it's tone deaf, I'm sorry. We have to get rid of some of this stuff and change the focus. So
could you resubmit, please?
Yeah. I haven't read the whole plan. I just went through to see if my comments were addressed. Most of them weren't. And so I'll resubmit, but I might have to reread the hundreds of pages. But anyway, thank you.
Yeah, and so the statement you just read violates the Scott Valley plan.
Right.
Encouraging urbanization.
It was a hypothetical in there, but to have a hypothetical that's so tone deaf in there, it should be taken out. And I commented on that earlier, and...
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
One comment online.
I have one comment online.
Angelina Cook, you can unmute. It is your turn to speak.
Battery 70%.
Thank you for this opportunity to address the board. My name is Angelina Cook. I've been following the SCCMA process as a concerned citizen since its formation, and I do want to applaud the team that got the plan to this level. I feel like the process, even though imperfect, has gone as well as could be expected, considering how many diverse interests are legitimately concerned about this critical resource of groundwater. I want to acknowledge the speakers so far who have essentially conveyed that without sufficient groundwater supplies, we don't have agriculture, we don't have irrigation, we don't have cities, we don't have rivers, we don't have communities. So this SCCMA is excruciatingly important, and I really hope that the county takes implementation of the plan very seriously. I think the recent state-issued curtailment for the Shasta and Scott Rivers, it was done not because, it was done because the rivers are dry. Like, you know, the state finally instituted SCCMA to do the first ever regulation of groundwater, which is crucially important, but it's more of a long-term process. And when water users allow our rivers to become so diminished with flows that we're at the brink of losing a keystone species that once defined and characterized our region, namely salmon, it's pretty indicative that our economy, our policies are not working. They're failing to meet the very basic needs for human economy and quality of life. So I think we have a lot of opportunities to make dramatic improvements once we wrap our heads around conservation, true conservation. Like, less is more. I think California and Siskiyou County need to shift our mindset from use it or lose it to less is more. See how much we can get from a little bit of water. It's obviously the most fundamental ingredient for life. We need to start treasuring it and honoring it and conserving it.
Time.
Not squandering or wasting it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment?
None online.
So I'm looking for a motion to move this forward to the public comment.
So move.
Was there something in here to change, though?
Yeah, just the date on the template letter, the NOI letter, the date should be changed from November date to December 7th.
November 16th gets changed to December 7th.
Yeah, correct.
Thank you.
With the amendment or change, however you want to say.
Sounds good.
And second, and I'd like to compliment, I know the Tulip Valley Fair is the same week as 7th, 8th, 9th, so I appreciate you changing that around.
And just a further comment, I just also want to applaud each of the advisory teams. I know that this was not an easy task, and for Siskiyou County and those members of the advisory team to have a grassroots effort to actually bring forward a plan that could possibly work. We're not there yet, obviously, but if this can work, it's coming from the grassroots up and not from the state down. And so I have a lot of hope that this can actually work. And I get that they may not be perfect yet, and we can, and that's what the public comment time is for now, is so that, you know, we can hear from the public finally. But I just, you know, I want to applaud the great work that the advisory teams have done. I know they were diverse in their content in each team, but I just can't believe also that it's been 3 years.
Gosh, I'm telling me.
Here we go.
Ready?
Yeah.
Supervisor or Director Chris?
Aye.
Director Cobsep?
Aye.
Director Valenzuela?
Okay.
Director Ogren?
Aye.
And Director Haupt?
Yeah, and I look forward to reviewing and making changes that you make going forward.
Sounds good. All right, thank you. Thank you.
All right. I'm going to adjourn as the Flood Control and Water Conservation District and reconvene as the Board of Supervisors. Supervisor's requests. Are we ready for that yet? Was there a revision you were bringing back?
Oh, the letters?
Yeah.
No, the
fire one.
Sorry.
Yeah, on the fire one. I'm just,
yeah,
before I get there, I just want to say.
The 2177.
So we'll do A first, which is the cannabis.
Move to extend.
Second.
Okay, Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobsep?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
Supervisor Haupt?
Aye. And see if you're ready to go to the wildfire.
Yes, Elizabeth Nielsen, Deputy County Administrator, and it is my understanding that there are edits needed to that, and I can certainly make those edits and bring it back to the September 7th board meeting. Unless the edits were
today.
Okay.
Oh, question, because this was adopted as a resolution 21-77 and we're just bringing back the emergency, wouldn't it be a new resolution that would be adopted
with
revisions?
We're modifying the language to add suppression versus management.
Yeah.
And this is...
So
when do we bring it back?
So this is a continuance of a local emergency related to catastrophic wildfire.
We're amending that resolution.
And we would be amending that resolution today.
Okay, so it would be a new resolution.
It would. That's my understanding.
So we would repeal 2177 and bring replace it with this resolution, but with the added language with regards to suppression versus management, right?
And we
want to
do that today?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay. That's what you need for a motion, right? Correct?
Sure.
Done. I
move to approve with that.
Hang
motion on. Second all over the place.
Hey, okay, who am I taking for the motion maker? Thank you. Second, Ogren?
Sure.
And this is to adopt a new resolution. And what are we changing in which whereabouts?
What's the modification?
I apologize. I thought we were going to bring this back on September 7th with a new resolution. So I will go into that resolution now and make that change, but I'll need to come back up here.
Okay. All right. Postpone that motion then. Sorry.
Withdraw your motion.
Yes.
Second for now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Something starts today.
Take up C.
You ready to take up?
The two letters?
Yeah.
Yes,
the letters.
Which I need to know. Item numbers.
First one was that. You need a break?
I have the edits right here.
Okay,
so, yes, thank you.
this point of the word version. So in the, this is for the letter, the COVID-19 vaccination letter to Governor Newsom. In the subject line, it would now read COVID-19 vaccination mandates. And the first line of the letter would now, first sentence of the letter would now read, the Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors is submitting this letter in response to your July 26, 2021 mandate and the California Department of Public Health State Public Health Officer Order of August 5, 2021 order that requires all workers, in parentheses, as defined within the order, verify they are either vaccinated for COVID-19, comma, or if exempt, comma, required to test for COVID-19 either once or twice weekly as defined in the order. So that captures the August 5th change. And then there was one other edit in the second paragraph where it read, lastly, hospitals and clinics. It should, so it's the second to the last sentence. It should read hospitals and clinics, including those in Siskiyou County. And the rest of the sentence remains the same.
So they still do have to be tested?
They do.
Are we taking
exempt off? Workers. Exempt workers.
Are we taking off lastly?
Yes, we are taking
off. That's taken off.
Move to approve.
Second.
If I could add really just very quickly, there was correspondence related to this, and I don't know if I need to name all the people, but there were emails this morning. Board of Supervisors were either copied or I forwarded to them. Should I list those names of those people that sent those emails? Or just let us know that
they're still coming in.
On the record that we've been receiving
yes.
it. Okay. Okay. So, make a note here to approve the letter, but give me just a sec. And who is the motion and second again, please?
I motion and Michael.
Thank you. And this is to approve the letter with the changes as read by Ms. Nielsen, correct?
Correct.
Thank you. Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsev?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
No.
And Supervisor Ogren? And Supervisor Haupt?
Aye. Next.
Yes, I made the requested corrections to the letter to the Shasta Trinity National Forest. In the second paragraph, the second sentence will now read, however, comma, we are opposed to general entrance fees on public lands and we are concerned regarding development of new fees for many campgrounds, comma, trailheads, comma, boat ramps, comma, picnic sites, and fishing locations on the Shasta Trinity, comma, which will be a deterrent for residents and visitors. And that was the only edit to that letter.
Sums up what, you know, we're opposed to the fee increase. I'm okay with that.
And we're still calling to meet with them?
Yes, we did not remove that.
We have to approve for the change.
Second.
Okay, Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsev?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Haupt?
Aye.
And will we have those signed today?
We will.
Yeah. We have a review of item C, the local emergency related to the wildfire.
Yes.
The second was a question. Are we going to be incorporating the other fires at some point?
Yes.
Okay. When? Sorry.
No, don't apologize. Let me take a look.
We're changing the playing field here.
It is. It is. Let me just take a look.
We're looking at fire coming into Cecilville right now.
Correct.
Right.
earlier in the meeting, we did have the resolution proclaiming an emergency, which contained all of those fires.
Okay.
So, and as well as the proclamation by the Director of Emergency Services for the River Complex and Antelope Fire, which also includes the McCash and Cronin, Summer, and Haypress. So those are in place right now.
So what makes this one a separate standalone?
The standalone is the lava fire that we just had not too long ago. We didn't really have a break in between fires, so that was the lava fire. We identified the lava fire, and we're still working with the lava fire with a debris removal cleanup. So that's that continuation.
Okay.
And so with the resolution that you received today, we will be bringing back for the Antelope and for the River Complex throughout this entire process as well.
Thanks.
So if it is the pleasure of the board, if you'd like us to combine, however, with the CDAA or the funding request from FEMA, we'd like to keep them separate at this time just so that we can make sure it's clear of the funding requests
okay.
due to the difference in the fires.
Okay. I'm good with that.
Okay.
So in essence, we're going to add another extending
yeah.
one on the end, which you're heading for.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Ready?
I think so.
Okay. Supervisor Chris? Yeah, I have a motion and a second to extend. Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobbsett?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Mm-hmm.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Help?
Aye.
I think that's everything, finally.
But we're coming back with 2177.
Are we going to do port and staff reports? Just
yeah,
I got a couple real
something quick.
Something quick. Yeah, it's quick.
So would you say when?
Are we coming back after closed with the 2177?
Correct.
Okay.
That's the B.
Yes, thank you. I will be going to Sacramento here Wednesday. But one of the things that was mentioned in the public comment, I had the email forwarded to you from Chris Lee, the CSAC that oversees the letters regarding SB 9 and 10. So that's hopefully you get a chance to read that. But basically, I think we're just reading the following tagline. CSAC is not endorsing that, but it's, somewhere there's really not going to affect the rural county because we're a rural county. It's really designed, the author's designing it for the urban counties where they have acute housing shortage. Not that we don't have a housing shortage, but anyways, read that letter. Anyways, that's in there. Please read it. It is a concern, but not as big a concern as what they're alluding to. CDMHS is going to have a special meeting tomorrow, I think, or the next day. Again, not likely to impact rural counties.
Okay. Any other? For me, it's just fire, and more fire, it seems. That and... The water shortage in Scottsdale is kind of reaching a crisis at this point, and I'm very concerned about some of the things like cutting off stock water. That can't be tolerated. Anyway. With that, we'll go in the close.